You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Back to Better podcast. I'm your host, Liz Fidler-Mergen. And today I have Jones Laughlin, the author of Juggling Elephants. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, Liz, thank you. It's been delightful to get to know you and the work that you do. So I'm excited to talk about one of my favorite subjects today.
Yes. So, and let me give a shout out also to Todd, the co-author. So Jones and Todd wrote this together. So got to give credit where credit is due. But today I have Jones on the episode with me. And I'm really excited because when I made this list of what books I wanted to do, I came up with 30 books. So I have 30 months worth of books for this books club already. And they're books that I've listened to over and over again, but we started reaching out to the authors and you were the very first to get back to me. So thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you. I love your approach and just into the types of things that you do. And of course, we've connected on the fact that we both have strong agriculture backgrounds. And so I think it was just, you know, it was serendipity.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, we just got back from the Minnesota State Fair. My parents have been 4-H parents for 24 years.
They
have had kids showing at the Minnesota State Fair because there were six of us spread out over 17 years. So like my one brother could start when he was younger and older. And I made this really heartfelt post. You know, my youngest brother just finished his freshman year of college. So in Minnesota, you could show until after that freshman year. And so it was their last year. It was the end of a dynasty. They've had a beef animal at the Minnesota State Fair. And I said, thank you so much. And as I'm an adult and as my brothers are parents ourselves, I mean, we're not too far from our kids showing at the state fair, you know, and, you know, my parents are retirement age and it's, you know, they've still got kids in 4-H and realizing how much of an investment that was. You know, we complain and we had to watch what we were saying around my mom. So I'm like, well, it's just so hard to bring the kids to the fair. And she looks at me like, yep, we've been doing it for how many years? But you realize that as you get older, what an investment those things are, but also just how much we ended up gravitating toward people with similar backgrounds. And I think that's not a coincidence that those people that have lived those shared experiences. And so, I don't know, you didn't know anything about my flower farm or anything like that when I first emailed you about a self-help book club. But as you started, I'm sure Googling me, making sure who is this person? What do I want to do? It just, I don't know, those backgrounds, never underestimate that background and where you came from.
Oh, absolutely. It's so important. It shapes us more than we realize, both in positive ways and ones that maybe aren't as positive sometimes because of the experiences we have, but they become this beautiful mosaic that if we have the awareness to reflect and look at who we are and what we've learned, we can use that. I mean, you and I both are using skills today that grew up in your case, you know, your case from showing animals at the fair. Mm-hmm. For me, it was, you know, speaking competitions or those things in the FFA. And working with people with different perspectives and ideas. And I marvel at that as well, is that every day there's something I'm using that I learned a really long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's what, you know, when we talked about, we had a little bit of a pre-chat before we recorded this, but so the book Juggling Elephants came out originally in 2005, correct?
Correct. As a self-published in 2005.
Yeah, self-published in 2005. And so it's 19 years old now. And I just found this book a year ago. I was in a networking group and someone pointed out that book, and it was actually a male that pointed it out, which when I look at gender roles and people who talk about those things and those, you know, what you gravitate toward and being a woman in business, when someone that I consider a mentor or, you know, someone in business, because again, I'm a nurse practitioner. I didn't learn anything about how to run businesses or, you know, as I've kind of just dove into the world of entrepreneurship, but, you know, sometimes I'm like, okay, like I'm going to listen to that one because I'm curious, because so many of the books that I gravitate toward are parenting and acknowledging how difficult it is to be a woman with, you know, this or that, but we all have the same struggles and the same balancing acts. And when I listened to the book, what I really appreciated about it was the perspective of how the wife juggles the elephants and her circus and just moving it back and forth and how it can apply to anything. Because sometimes it's like, well, yeah, that's great, but that doesn't apply to me because of this. And so I feel like this is a book that could apply to anyone.
Well, thank you for that. And that was one of the goals when we initially wrote it. Well, let me back up. I'm being a little bit, I don't know what the word is, altruistic there. When Todd and I wrote the book, we started out with some concepts for ourselves. We never thought about it becoming a book, really. The big idea for us was that we needed a framework, a blueprint, to better understand how we could manage all the stuff going on in our lives. And so that was really the initial start of the process. And then we used the process for about a year, then eventually wrote the book. And then, just as you said, people came to us and said, okay, I'm, you know, 50 and I'm juggling elephants. We're like, wait a minute. I thought you stopped juggling elephants after 50.
Because we wrote it for the 20. Yeah.
This?
Yeah. Like, I should be done juggling by then.
Right.
I can't keep juggling for that much.
Exactly.
I'm not as far away from 50 as I pretend.
Yeah. Then we would have people who were, you know, college age, you know, just starting college, would talk about their circus and their rings. And then I'll never forget, I did, your background is in healthcare. I did some work for the North Carolina Hospital Auxiliary. I spoke at their conference a few years ago. And of course, the average age in that room is what, 75 and up? You know, I mean, it's all blue and bald, you know, that's what you got. And so it was fascinating because they asked me to talk about juggling elephants. And I'm like, really?
Why are you juggling elephants? Can't
well,
elephants.
Yeah. After the event was over, I said, do you really have elephants? And, oh, and they were just going through the process, you know, medication, end of life. Am I going to have enough money? Where am I going to live? What am I going to do with my stuff? And then one sweet, dear little lady, probably 4'8" or something, she's like, Jones, you'll always have elephants. They just change. And I'm like, there you go. First of all, I'm depressed. But second, you're right. Because we do. We always have more to do than we can get done. And if we're not careful, if we don't have some framework, and whether they use the circus or whatever, if you don't have some framework, you're going to miss something.
Yep, exactly.
Something's not going to get done well. Yeah.
And I think that, so if you're new to the podcast, just jumping on, there is a link in the episode notes for how to get signed up for the book club, because the goal is everyone who's listening to this will have already read the book by the time they listen to this episode. So that's, the audience is meant for people who have read the book. So, I mean, we can go back and forth and summarize the book, but why don't you listen to the whole thing or read the whole thing or whatever to understand it. But the concepts that I really resonated with is, you know, I have, me personally, I have got multiple businesses that are kind of sisters or cousins at times, but they're definitely not twins. And then I work, you know, I still work a W-2 job one day a week. I still work as a nurse practitioner. I'm a mom. I'm trying to spend more time, you know, especially after having lost my husband unexpectedly. Now I'm remarried. I am trying so hard to find joy. I shouldn't say I'm trying so hard. I'm not trying as hard as I was. It comes easier now, but I am finding joy in every day and I'm making time for my friends. And, you know, you only live once, but I still have these goals and I still have, you know, and the part of it where it talked about making sure that the rings are peaking and ending at different times, you know, and which ring are you going to be in? Which act are you going to be in? And the audience can only focus on one thing at a time, because as much as we love to pretend like we're great at multitasking or whatever, it's, if you are in the ring that you're in right now, that's the one that you need to give your undivided full attention, because otherwise, you know, there was the part in there about Jackie, the teacher, who during her prep time as a teacher, she ended up calling her travel agent. Well, then all of a sudden she doesn't get her work done.
Yeah.
And she's like, if I would have just done what I was supposed to be doing, I wouldn't be suffering later. And it's so simple. It's such a simple concept. Like, be here now, or, you know, focus on what you're supposed to be focusing on. But sometimes we need to be reminded, and we need to be heard or be told that in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, thank you for that. We say that it's not about balance. It's not about, you know, spending a little bit of time in each one of those places. It's about being in the right ring at the right moment, and really fully focusing your time and attention where it needs to be now, so that when the next act starts or when something else, you're ready for that one. I mean, and that goes back to the whole idea of something as simple as personal wellness. You know, from reading the book that, and you thought about it, of all the three rings of work, self, and relationship, the one that we neglect most often is the self ring.
Correct.
Well, you know, if you're not in the right ring at the right moment, i.e. getting a good night's sleep, it's going to negatively impact your performance in the work ring the next day.
Exactly.
The circus teaches us that, you know, that whole tent idea is that all three rings are important. So it's not about saying, well, I do some here. It's not about balance, about being in the right ring at the right moment. I got to tell you, I work with a lot of corporate audiences who, you know, I tell them, I say, you know, you're here at this event to get better at what you do. And it may not be that you need to squeeze 10 more minutes of productivity out of your day in the work ring. Some of you need to go home earlier.
Yeah.
For some of you, you need to put the phone away at 8 o'clock at night. For some of you, you need to, you know, you talk about having children. For some of you, you need to go out and play with your kids, because that's going to give you that emotional, mental energy boost that when you're at work on Monday or Tuesday, you're going to be feeling good about work versus going, gosh, I wish I spent more time with my kids this weekend. And you're just not as effective at work because you weren't in the right ring at the right moment.
Exactly. And I think being able to identify that maybe the ring you're in, maybe it's time to get out of that ring earlier than you expected. I use a lot of time blocking. I will give myself, I'll set a timer, I'll put my phone on do not disturb, and I get 90 minutes to get through whatever.
Love it.
It's like, this is what I'm working on right now. Maybe it's my podcast, or maybe it's this, or maybe it's that. And I have another, this is part of my greater umbrella of the podcast, the Flower Farmer Forum, which it's all about, you know, agritourism and growing your own cut flowers and building a business similar to mine, essentially. But when I'm working on that, I'm working on that. Or when I'm working on, okay, now I've got a, you know, I've got a meeting with a bride, and I block off 90 minutes on my schedule if I'm meeting with a bride, because when I'm done talking to them, I put the whole Canva together of the picture of their vision board of what their flowers are going to look like. I send the estimate, I send the proposal, I do the whole thing. Cause I used to give myself 45 minutes to an hour so that I could get working on something else. But it's like, no, if I give myself a full 90 minutes, then it's done, you know? So blocking on that, cause otherwise why come back to it later? Why touch things twice? But then last night I was actually, because we're recording this episode on August 29th, technically the book club comes out next week. So this is actually going to be the October book. So we're recording this in August, but this is the October book. Well, we were trying to make sure that, you know, the podcast, when you sign up for the course, it gets emailed to you, and I'm working on all these automations and making sure that it's all good behind the scenes. And I realized that there were a couple things wrong with the Canva graphics in the first one with the person that I'm interviewing. And I have an assistant that helps me with a lot of that. I used to have a virtual assistant. I now have an in-person assistant who helps with the farm and stuff, because I realized that my mind does not function virtually.
Good for you.
And yes. And so then I'm like logging into Canva, trying to edit it. And I just like pause, and I'm like, okay, I put myself in this ring. I'm time blocking. I'm saying that this is what I'm working on right now, but it's not ready. And why don't I have Tina fix this tomorrow, and then I'll work on it on Friday? But because it's otherwise I'm going to spend time doing things that she could be doing that is very much within her scope, her job description, what I pay her to do. And the only way that I can get as much done is if I offload it. So now all of a sudden I'm like, well, I can just real quick do it. And it's not that, you know, I can't, or I'm above it or whatever, but it's like, this is not ready for me. This ring is not ready for me. So I'm going to move on to the next act, quit wasting time on this one. And then I'll come back to it later. Like, we'll just have to, you know, move it around.
Yeah. And think about, Liz, think about the circus equivalent of that. You would never, if you went to a circus, and you're sitting in the audience and an act comes out and the ringmaster says, you know, we've got the high wire act, but we don't have one of the wires that we normally have. So we're going to go ahead and perform the act and do everything else. And then a little bit later, we'll have them come back and do, I mean, the efficiency, the effectiveness would be so lost, and you're making excuse. And I love what you said there is that, no, I'm not ready for this. And it might, you know, in your case, there was a resource, there was a physical resource, but you know, it may be that you're not mentally ready or emotionally ready or financially ready. If it's a project in some way, and stopping to say, this is not the right act right now. Mm-hmm. This is not where I need to be. I mean, that's so critical. The challenge I find is that most people won't stop long enough to go through that process in their head, like you just did. Mm-hmm.
And I think, so the book that I have coming out in September mm-hmm. talks a lot about identifying when you are past the point of diminishing returns.
Beautiful. And love it.
I love that saying. The author is Laura Vanderkam, and she goes into it so in depth. And mm-hmm. I think that that's so important. It's amazing. All of these books just cross over so much. I'm like, do you guys talk to each other? Like, how do I, you know, and I thrive on it, but right. identifying when you're going to need an intermission, when you need, because guess what? Last night I was getting crabby. I was getting, you know, I'm like, I'm hungry. My family's upstairs. I'm messing around. I was trying to get this completely done, but I didn't want the wrong graphic on there. Well, I'll just fix the graphic. It's like, just walk away. Like, you're not, because guess what? I could have gotten it done in 20 minutes, 20 more minutes, but then I would have just been done for the night versus, sure. you know, I just, once you hit that point of, you know, and I think that that's really important for me. So I'm 35 years old. We were, you know, about a decade ago was when it was really peak hustle culture, right? Mm-hmm. So we millennials are tired. We've had side hustles since, you know, and I know that sounds crazy and you're probably like, okay, but we are. Cause I mean, we've always just been, just work harder. And, you know, I love the Gen Z in some ways, like, oh, well, I got a different, like, I literally was talking to one of my friend's daughters and she's 23 and she had started a job and I'm like, how did it go? And she's like, well, you know, I ended up moving on because just the vibe was off. And I'm like, okay. Like, tell me more what that sounds like. And so I think, you know, finding that balance of identifying, like, when is it okay to quit? When is it okay? And we'll find the middle, right? Because obviously sure. quitting jobs after a month because the vibe is off. Let's talk in a couple of years. Let's see how that goes. You know, I'm like, let's see how that works long term. But I admire it a little bit because in a way, I mean, I would have never done that, you know, just keep going, put it out, stick it out, or, you know, but I think identifying when it's time to sharpen your axe. Have you heard that parable about the
teacher? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, sharpening the saw and the whole idea. Yeah, I'm splitting log. Yeah, all that. And Abraham Lincoln, I think the first one, you know, he's talking about, you know, that. And so, yeah, I think it's really critical. And I talk about that in some of my training programs based on the book where this whole idea, an intermission, strategically stopping, you know, when you said the key there, I was getting crabby. Or I was tired. Or if I, you know what, if I'd have pushed through, I'd have had nothing left for my family. Mm-hmm. And you identified that there's always factors or things that tell us signals. In fact, I'll ask the question sometimes, how do you know you need a break at work? And I'll, you know, walk around the room. People say, well, I get crabby or I can't focus or I've been reading something. I still don't understand it. I said, yeah, think about how much time you've wasted in that moment or the relationship with that coworker you broke because you snapped at them because you were tired and frustrated because you'd been so focused on something. So, you know, when we begin to recognize those triggers or those things are happening, I said, that's the time for an intermission. It's a time to strategically stop. That's what I call it in training is strategically stopping to see how things are going. And part of that process is we call it the three R's, but the first one is rest. You know, what's the rest you need? And of course, people think, oh, I need physical rest. Well, what about mental, emotional, spiritual, sensory rest? I mean, there's so many different kinds that we need. And so it's identifying the rest you need. And then how am I going to get it? Okay, well, sometimes that's switching from one task to another. Okay, I need some problem solving rest. I've been solving problems all day. Okay, now that means I'm going to, you know, go do an activity that doesn't require me to solve problems. Maybe it's entering something in QuickBooks for the month, or, you know, whatever. But then once you've done those things, then you can actually stop and say, where do I need to refocus my time now? That's the third R, you know, but you can't make that decision about the best use of your time until you've stopped long enough to rest and get yourself to a better place to make a better decision about where those next 15 minutes, hour, or day needs to be spent.
Yeah. And I think that for me, as I've transitioned, as I've grown my business, I've started bringing on a team. I have three 1099 employees. And I have, whether they're a freelance florist that do the wedding design, or they, I literally have people that come for a few hours and pick flowers or pull leaves, you know, it's very task based. And then I have one W-2 employee that I'm really excited about. And I take that on as a tremendous responsibility, like realizing for the first time that, oh my gosh, someone else's livelihood is dependent on me. Okay. As we're scaling this. And then I have about, I don't know, there's four or five, you know, my podcast producer or the person who does my website, you know, they have a monthly fee of, you know, the kind of task management. And I'm trying to learn as much as I can as my business is growing and scaling. We're going to need to hire a couple more employees next year as we have this new space that we're building and expanding our farm. And I want to learn about my team and what their needs are, because I think it's important to give them that flexibility to know when they're past the point of diminishing returns. And I think that when I was working as an RN before I was finished with grad school, it's shift work in a hospital. And so, you know, you're working in the ICU and you're doing XYZ. It's like your break is at this time, period. Yeah. Whether, you know, and sometimes you're like, I don't need a break yet. I'm feeling good. I'm going to need a break later, or, you know, but it's, that's that time. And so, you know, trying to, you know, otherwise everyone takes their same break from, you know, 12 to 1 or whatever. And so I think when you're a business owner, or when you're doing mind work, or when you're doing, you know, more task-based things, finding that natural time to take a break, what are your thoughts on that? And I know that, you know, that I've talked to a lot of people that are business owners and, you know, trying to get people to think in that way and that change of culture. And they're like, well, you want me just to ask them when they want a break all the time? They'll take a break all the time. I'm like, well, okay, let's talk about empowering and like how to identify those things.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, we saw this certainly during the pandemic, where people, managers, leaders of organizations got so caught up in focusing on, you know, hours, not outcomes type thing. And I think when you ask that question about that, I think, first of all, as a business owner or a leader or manager or person responsible for them, you have to have clarity about what the work that's expected is. You know, that's where a lot of the frustration comes in. And we talk about burnout. You know, burnout is usually not because of these 40,000 factors. It's okay, I'm tired of working with unclear expectations and taking something from my boss and them saying, oh, that's not what I want. I can't figure out what you want because you won't tell me, type thing. So I think it's really critical that it starts with you having clear expectations of what needs to be done and the timeline in which it needs, and it needs to be done, because you have to have that clarity. They're working for you. Yes, they're working with you. And I'm sure, Liz, you are a phenomenal leader, boss, those type things. But I think it starts with that. And then I think it's where, you know, okay, here's what I need. Here's a timeline in which I need it. Now, how, you know, how would you approach that? What works best for you? And whether, you know, you mentioned about somebody cutting flowers, you probably have some non-negotiables in that, and that, you know, how many flowers have to be cut, or a certain time frame, or which flowers, those things. But maybe you have some negotiables with it. You know, as long as this XYZ task gets done by Friday, you know, you can come in and work on them whenever you want. And so then I think helping, you know, finding out from them what it is that they need, once you understand what you need, I think that just makes the process go so much more smoothly. And they may say, well, you know, I'm really not a, you know, a morning person or something. You know, I really would like to start work at one or two. And as long as that doesn't violate the outcomes you need, then why not? But I think it all starts, with having those conversations, finding out, you know, what's of interest to the person, how they like to work at their best, or even asking that question, what helps you to work at your best? What environment, how much supervision do you find works for you? How, when you have a question, you know, how do you want me to approach it? Do you want to text me? Do you want to call me? Do you want me to check in on you every couple hours? You know, just finding out what is the environment that helps them to work at their best. And people are surprised by that question, but then they'll give you an answer.
And I think sometimes people don't know, and giving yourself permission for it to change, because maybe they're answering based on past experiences of maybe they've only worked for a micromanager, or maybe they've only worked for, you know, in a setting where your computer screen is monitored, or maybe they're, you know, like maybe they've only done whatever, or, you know, shift work, or, you know, I remember when I first started dating my late husband, and he texted me or something at like 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, aren't you at work, or what do you mean? And he's like, oh, I had a dentist appointment. And I remember being shocked. I'm like, well, did you take a vacation day? Oh, you must be off all day. You had to have taken, you know, because it just, I would never be able to leave shift work as an RN to go to a dentist appointment. And so it, and my had grown up with my mom being a PA, same thing. And then, you know, working, you know, shifts in the ER or whatever. And then my dad was a farmer. And so it never occurred to me that, like, no, I just told my boss I'd be in late, and it all evens out. I'm salaried. And I was like, wow, that's an amazing perk. And he's like, it's not that uncommon to like be able to go to a dentist appointment or whatever it was. And it just really dawned on me that, wow, there are other careers out there, other jobs that are flexible in that way. How do you, now that the book is 19 years old, how do you, I mean, do you carry around little slips of paper that say what ring you're in, or is it so ingrained in you, or?
You know, I am my own lifelong project in this stuff. You know, you remember I told you Todd and I wrote it for our own benefit. And as I tell people, when I have it all figured out, I'll be dead and it won't matter. you know, it has become much more natural to remind myself, you know, what ring do I need to be in right now? Because, and I normally catch myself with that if I'm beginning to stray away from the productivity or the impact I should be having in the moment. I say, you know, what's causing me to be not as focused in this ring? And normally there's something I'm thinking about, or there's I don't have clarity on the task, or something that's causing me to do that.
I said, maybe you're hungry, you need a Snickers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. That's so true. And that happens way too often. So I think, you know, that has become ingrained in me. The bigger piece for me is the ringmaster aspect of what am I being the ringmaster of? I mean, that was very illuminating to Todd and I when we first, you know, started doing research for the book and talking to, you know, some people who'd been ringmasters, different things. You know, the ringmaster's not in control of everything. You know, they might be seen as the star of the show, but they only can have so much influence, but they need to make sure they're having the influence they can. And so for me, especially when I'm, you know, starting to get so much going on, I say, okay, what am I the ringmaster of right now? You know, I'm the ringmaster of my schedule, or I'm the ringmaster of my response, or I'm the ringmaster of my discipline. But that's really been something that's been so helpful to me that I still use just as vibrantly, in fact, if not more today than I did 19 years ago, is reminding myself that I am the ringmaster. I have control over certain things, and that's where I need to exercise influence. And things I don't have control over, I don't have control over. But if I find, if I work more in that space where I do have impact, influence, and control, this is not as important about what I don't have control over.
Correct.
You know, so that's been a huge piece. The other one for me is the performer's idea. You kind of touched on that a few moments ago. Is how am I working with the people who I have expectations of? And that's not just my assistants. That's not just my business partners. That's my family, you know? It was interesting. just our two girls as they grew up under the juggling elephant's tent, kind of, if you will, is this whole idea. I would think about, you know, am I working with my daughters effectively? Am I giving them chores to do so that it takes some pressure off of me to do things? Or am I saying, oh, I'm the dad, I'm supposed to take care of everything? There's been lots of times when I've said, you know, you need to let those performers help you more often because they want to. It's part of their purpose. It's part of their DNA. They get great joy from helping you make your circus more successful, those things. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you could speak to that so much more powerfully with all the different projects and things that you've had going on. People get great joy when you ask them to help or support you, as long as it's in a timely way and it's not something that's overbearing. Yeah. But you know, people get great joy from that. But we tend to think we've got to get it all done. Mm-hmm. That we can't rely on others. And as we say in the book, nobody likes a one-ring circus. A circus is not a one-person show. It takes a team of people who are engaged in the act at the moment to make the circus successful.
Yeah. And I think what really the visual that I got from it was, okay, so I'm the ringmaster and I have my three rings. There's self, relationships, and career. Or right? Those are the three.
Yeah.
And in my relationships is my husband. And I just got remarried in April. He is a fantastic support person. Wonderful. He is, you know, second dad to my daughters. They're so fortunate to have him. You know, so I think about, like, he's in my relationship ring and I'm trying to balance all of these things, but pausing and reminding myself that he is also the ringmaster of his own circus.
Yes.
And I am in his relationship ring.
Beautifully said.
And
absolutely.
So reminding myself that, wait a minute, what does this look like to him? Because our relationships might overlap a lot. You know, we have each other and our daughters, but we have our own family, our own friends. Mm-hmm. Ourself is going to look very differently. For me, I have a tendency for my self ring. I mean, I made a podcast and a book club for a hobby. Like, this is, you know, to some people, this is like, what, like, no, this is like, and hopefully eventually this is going to get a big sponsor and I'm going to get paid for it and whatever. But for now, sure. This is literally just a hobby, and that's okay. And acknowledging that sometimes people for fun, they want to do what other people view as is work. You know, this is a passion project of mine as I'm trying to do this. His self ring has nothing to do with mine when it comes to things like this. He would love to go for a run, go hiking, go. And I'd like doing those things too, but he has to be reminded that, no, this is my self ring. It's not just my career ring. This is also my self ring. And I have to be reminded that I need to be able to give him space to do his self ring because they don't look the same. And so remembering that, I'm not the ringmaster of our family. He's not the ringmaster of our family. I am the ringmaster of my own circus. He's the ringmaster of his own circus.
Yeah.
And some of it overlaps, but they're not the same.
Oh, well said. Oh, I need to, I'm glad we're recording this. I'll be going back and listening to that part. But you're so right in the sense that we really have to say, my circus looks different than your circus. And again, going back, what am I the ringmaster of? And, you know, and as I talk about, sometimes I do a breakdown in the training sessions and I'll talk about, you know, who are the performers in your circus, and people start listing them out by role, not by name. And then I switch to, you know, audience. I talk about the audience in your circus, which are the people who have expectations of you. And some people go, well, they're some of the same people. I'm like, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, is that you may be the ringmaster of some things and they're performing your circus, and in other places, they're the ringmaster and you're the performer. You know, there's expectations there. Perform. Some people get a little caught up on the idea of, well, I'm not a performer. Well, if you look at it from the standpoint that means expectations. Mm-hmm. Yes. I have expectations of my wife, Lisa. She has expectations of me, you know. For example, you know, my wife has really gotten into stained glass in the past year. Mm-hmm. I look at that and I go, you know, that's just not my thing. But that's something she does for her self ring. Yeah. I'm a performer in her circus in the sense that one of the expectations she has is that when she needs to get lost in stained glass for a while because she's been working on class and other things so much, I need to back off and say, have that time, Lisa. You need half a day? Take that half a day. Mm-hmm. And I need to go get my self ring and do the things that nurture and encourage and make me my best self, mm-hmm. so that when our circuses do collide or come back together again, we are our best selves for each other.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that this is something that I'm proudly coming into and acknowledging for myself, but it's taken me almost a lifetime of, I'm a very driven, I'm a very loud, talkative, extroverted extrovert.
And no, I would never have guessed.
Yeah. And so, but I, you know, every report card was, she talks too much, you know, and, you know, every time they're like, hey, do we have any volunteers? Like, I'm the first one to raise my hand. Like, I'll be on the leadership committee. I'll be, you know, whatever. And that's just who I am. But that has a tendency to come off a certain way to certain people. And I've acknowledged that. And the thing is, you know, I've had friends in the past that, you know, they've said, they're like, I just, you kind of exhaust me. And I get really offended by that, yep, kind of, because I don't mean to come across that way. And I don't care if someone else runs a half marathon. I don't care, you know, but this is me and my expectations. Mm-hmm. I find it hard to decide, you know, which table I can sit at, which circus I can talk about sometimes, because I really don't mean to try to be a one-upper or try to, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I'm just really passionate about what I'm doing and I love what I'm doing. And so if someone asks me about it, I talk about it. But for people that aren't wired this way, it can come across as, you know, they're not doing, or that I think that they're not doing enough. And it's like, I don't care what you're doing. I just, this right. is what I'm doing though, or whatever that might yeah. be. Yeah. And so yeah. I think it's important to acknowledge that circuses look different to different sure. people and well, a successful circus.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to, in the book, we talk about purpose. Mm-hmm. And to me, you have to start with purpose. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has to begin there for each of us. I can't tell you what the purpose of your circus, of your work and life is. Only you can decide that. You can't, you know, choose it for me. You might say some things that might cause me to go, huh, what is my purpose? But you can't tell me what it is, because it's up to me. It's based on my values. It's based on my priorities. It's based on my beliefs, all those types of things. And a lot of times you talk about, you know, when people might say, oh, you exhaust me, or do me. That's when I think we get into that comparison. Mm-hmm. Of, okay, does my circus look like your circus? Well, no, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. If you are clear about your purpose, where I think we get into trouble is that if we don't have a really good handle on our values, our priorities, you know, all those things that make up what do we want the outcome of our circus to be, then that's when I think we start playing the comparison game. We start, you know, getting frustrated by other people. Oh, they're so much more successful than I am. Well, what does success look like to you? And, mm-hmm. and then people go, well, I hadn't really thought about it. I'm like, aha, you know, you're just throwing a bunch of acts in the circus, hoping that at the end of the night, the cash drawers are full and the audience leaves happy. How's mm-hmm. that working for you?
Yeah.
You know, if you start with purpose, and one of the definitions of purpose is desired intent or outcome. When I'm coaching, sometimes I'll tell someone, okay, if you had the outcome from this week that you wanted, what would it be? What are some of the outcomes you'd like? And they'll, you know, write them down, or if we're in person, we'll talk about them. And then I'll say, okay, what are the acts that need to be in your lineup so that at the end of the week, you can say, I achieved those outcomes, or mm-hmm. possibly achieve those outcomes? Because you're not the ringmaster of everything. Things happen. Animals get out, wires break, you know, yeah. grains and those things. But it's interesting because we just don't think that way. And it's not a new concept. Stephen Covey in Seven Habits talked about begin with the end in mind, mm-hmm. you know, and it's that whole idea of what do you want your circus to really perform and do well at? Mm-hmm. Okay. What are the acts need to be in your lineup today, this week, this month, this year, this lifetime, if you want to get there? You know, mm-hmm. to those things. And so it's a great point that you bring up about people saying, you know, oh, I just don't feel like I'm as successful as this person or that person. Well, what do you want your circus to look
exactly.
like?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And someone else's definition of success compared to what mine might be. And, you know, I heard a quote the other day that was, so success is not the key to happiness. Happiness is the key to success.
Oh, I do like
if you
that.
Love what you're doing. You will be successful.
Yeah, if you are aligning your day, your week, your months with your purpose, with you, in alignment with, if you are living out your values, mm-hmm. then yes, you will be happy and you will be successful. I got to tell you, I both of us have an ag background. I was at the American Farm Bureau Convention in 1990, years ago, before you were born, right?
I was born in 89.
Okay, see, I was close. I was close. I was close. But anyway, so when you were 1 year old, young lady, but I was there and I was talking to someone and I was just out of college and the gentleman was asking me, he says, "Well, Jones, what are you thinking about? What's next for you?" Of course, I was going to be an ag teacher and I just started rolling off all this stuff that I want to accomplish and do, the how, what I wanted a house to look like, the land I wanted to have one day. And he was just kind of sitting there, shake his head. And he said, "You know, Jones, for me, if I have a family that's thriving, I'm successful."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, okay, you know, and here I am, you know, full of vinegar and ready to take on life. And he's saying, you know, if you got this, you're successful. And and of course, some of those pieces would help create, you know, that family and those things. But mm-hmm. It was just really a watershed moment for me for getting serious about what is important to me. Mm-hmm. What does success look like? Mm-hmm. And then once I figure that out, then you're happy pursuing it because it's getting you to somewhere you want to be. Mm-hmm. You know, and so often people get so caught up. I mean, do we want to talk about social media and how we do the comparison game there, or people think they have to have this and that and the other and those kinds of things? I'm not talking about material things. I'm just talking about everything.
Yep.
You know, because we talk about in the book, you know, juggling elephants is a belief that you can get it all done. Mm-hmm. That if you drink enough energy drinks, if you lose enough sleep, you can get it all done. Juggling elephants teaches us you can't get it all done.
You better
pick and choose the right things. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to be really disappointed at the end of the week, at the end of the month, at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that, so with this book club, the books that I chose, mm-hmm. it's kind of funny because I must go through these. These are all books that I've picked for the last 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. And you can see patterns. I can look at to the order of which I had them on my Audible app.
Yes.
And, you know, when I go through and you can tell all of a sudden it'll go through like, you know, murder mystery thrillers for about 2 months. And then I went back to self-help and I'm like,
yeah,
that was giving myself an intermission. Okay. Like that was, you know, and sometimes they're really focused on time management. Sometimes they're really focused on careers. Sometimes they're really focused on one of the books that's coming up. It's called Joyful. And it talks about like the little joys in little everyday life, because, you know, happiness is, it's not that hard to come by, but happiness is a big feeling. But it's like, if you look for joy in every day, like that feeling of joy, just that spark of joy, that's what leads to overall happiness, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's like, yeah. When you start looking and recognizing those things and okay, what is success and what is whatever, and realizing that, okay, success is happiness. And how do you get happiness? You get joy. That means I don't hate what I do every day for a job. I don't go to bed at night feeling like a bad mom. I don't, you know, or whatever it might be. And those cumulative things are what brings happiness, not the house and the mm-hmm. farm and the, you know, like I achieved sure. all these things. I got X amount in my bank account. It's all the little things that, you know, when you start really dissecting it, and then obviously knowing which ring to be in and yeah.
There is a moment in the keynote of the training program that we do on the book where when I'm kind of talking about comparing your working life to a circus, I'll talk about, okay, let's talk about your audience for a moment. You know, audience is defined as those individual groups that have expectations of you. And, you know, as we think about trying to get everything done and it's not working, it's not happening, we're feeling overloaded. I said, I want you to do something. And I'll have them turn to someone around them. And I'll say, I want you to turn somebody around you. I want you to tell them, who is someone in your circus audience who's giving you a standing ovation right now? And I love that moment because you'll see them turn. And then I go through the crowd and say, okay, tell me who it is. Some people say, it's my spouse, my kids, it's my dog, it's my boss, it's a coworker, it's my mom. And it starts going. And I love that moment because it reminds people that, you know, in this mist of beating ourselves up for what's not getting done, we need to take more moments to celebrate what is getting done. Mm-hmm. And it that brings us joy when we get this visual of somebody going, yes, you're doing a great job. And we need to look for those folks because mm-hmm. we're always focusing and you're a high achiever, Liz. You're thinking of this example going, well, Jones, if there's a thousand people in my audience and there's one person going and the other 999 are clapping and cheering, I am focused on that one person.
I'm focused on that one person.
And you'll never change them. And that's okay because we can't get it all done.
Correct.
We've got to pick and choose who's the audience members we want clapping and cheering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that reminds me of a quote that I heard a long time ago that I love. And it's don't care about what other people think, but care about what your people think.
Oh, I like that.
So when I'm dropping my kid off in sweatpants and people are looking at me like, oh, she just rolled out of bed. No, I've actually been up since 5 a.m. and I made 40 bouquets already this morning and I recorded two podcast episodes and, you know, like whatever, like, again, like knowing or, you know, forgot to pack my kid's lunch or whatever. Well, she ends up getting, you know, to eat whatever. But it's like, do other people think I'm a good mom? I don't care if other people think that I'm doing it the way they are. But do my kids think I'm a good mom?
Exactly.
If my kids don't think I'm a good mom, then that's a problem. You know, if people think that, you know, I work too much or I'm, you know, need to be a better housewife or whatever. I tell my husband, I mean, when he married me, I'm like, I am a really, really crappy housewife. I am not good at cleaning, but I will work really hard and I will pay someone to clean the house. And he's like, okay. I'm like, if you want someone who's going to be like the tidy housewife and whatever, then that's just not me. And that's okay. And is he okay with that? Yep. I mean, does he wish I was a little tidier or whatever, but that's fine. Like, you know, just
well,
choose, but
yeah. I mean, but there, you know, I don't want to interrupt, but I just, it's such a powerful point. I think that's where communication is critical. Even in this whole thing we're talking about with juggling elephants is that a lot of times we create elephants for ourselves because we haven't communicated expectations to a partner or to a person who works with us or for us or a relative or even our kids. And that creates elephants because we're going, why aren't they? And so now we're getting all, you know, bent out of shape about something when the reality is they have no idea. And if we're not telling them, well, you know, this is kind of what I was hoping for. Well, this is kind of what I was hoping for. Okay, well, how do we meet in the middle or what works for both of us and communicate? And I, like you did with your husband, that's another elephant that's created for us. That's unnecessary.
And I think, you know, making sure that sometimes just a brief conversation will stop something from turning into an elephant. I have learned so much about myself in the last 6 weeks since hiring Tina as my new administrative assistant.
Yep.
And I finally, like, she's here. She works 4 days a week from 8 to 2. And she has, her job description is very vast right now as we've just got so many projects going on. And I had her, and she was a teacher for 28 years, which is amazing.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's one. Her organizational skills.
Yeah. And so I had her, I'm like, okay, I essentially have like 6 different businesses that I have going on. And I'm like, I want you to write the objective of that business and like the goals of that business and kind of how it works. So for example, this book club, right? It's the Back to Better Book Club, you know, and I'm like, well, what do you think? Like, why do you think I'm doing this? Or what is the goal? And she's like, well, build an audience for when your book comes out, surround yourself with like-minded people. Success would be eventually get a sponsor. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I communicated that to you without even realizing it. And she got that. And then, you know, and then we were talking about, you know, whether it's the flower farm or this or that. And, you know, my goals are larger sales, like a wedding where they're going to spend $3,000 rather than getting hundreds and hundreds of people to spend $40 on one bouquet. You know, I want one big client. And, you know, so we had to really communicate that, like, hey, actually, we're not trying to attract a bunch of people to come to the farm. We're trying to attract the right people. Or
exactly.
You know, just communicating that. And then she's able to, then it doesn't turn into an elephant. Because all of a sudden it's like, if she's brainstorming all of these ideas, but she doesn't understand what success looks like or what the audience wants to see. And I'm her audience in her circus. Mm-hmm. And so what does that look like?
Yep. No, well said. And I like the way you use the circus language there. And that's a great check of yourself to see, am I communicating things clearly? Mm-hmm. And obviously I am. And what a great document now, because you can evaluate you as the ringmaster of her work. You can evaluate every task you assign to her, every expectation you have for her, every project that you want her to manage against what you just created. You've just decided what you want to have when the performance is over that night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's a circus, is this is what I want to have. This is what we're working toward. Okay. Will that act do it? Okay, great. Leave it in. Will that act do it? No, huh? Take it out. Is that, or do we have the resource for that act right now? No. Okay. Well, maybe it's going to come later, but the roadmap you're giving yourself and your team, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, thank you. We'll see. We'll see. I had two teachers working for me this summer on the farm, and they went back to school this week. So I'm juggling some options right now. But
that transition back, exactly.
So I'm definitely more of the farmer right now than what I've been doing all summer. But that's okay. I'm ready. I'm well rested. I took kind of an intermission this summer, and it's okay.
Beautiful. Well said.
Yeah. So any other thoughts on the book or any other key takeaways, or where can we find you?
Well, certainly, first of all, thank you, Liz, for this opportunity to talk about. I mentioned at the beginning, it's one of my favorite topics to talk about, not the book, but the topic, work-life success, because I make no bones about it. Family is huge to me. It's very important to me. And you talk about a place that I see people so much when they're career-oriented neglect. It is the relationship side, either with spouse, partner, children, and then that's something they regret later. And so one of my hopes out of this book is that people will take care of themselves so they, can take care of their families. And yes, they need to be successful in the workplace as well, but that can't be the only ring that they're working in. Right. As far as where they can find me is certainly my website, joneslaughlin.com. I'm there. Resources there that they can check out. Some of my other books as well. I have a book you and I've got to talk about sometime, How to Lead Like a Gardener. It's called Always Growing. And so that's one that came out a few years ago. Got another one coming out in January about how to focus. And it's going to use the world of bees and beekeeping to accomplish that. So I'm looking forward to that being released in January. Also real active on LinkedIn. That's the platform that I find, as you said, to find the right people. So I put out a lot of content on LinkedIn. So I'd welcome them to connect with me there. I'm also on Instagram. That's more of the Jones Laughlin. I put work stuff on there, but that's more Jones Laughlin, the personal person there. But if any of your participants are on Instagram, they certainly can reach out to me there at Jones Laughlin.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Well, my pleasure, Liz. Good luck to you and all the things you're doing. You're inspiring. I can't wait to see where your circus is 6 months or a year from now.
Thank you. I am curious too.